Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Fine Food Friday, April 4th. I'm Ray Graff. Today we welcome back author, historian, educator, baker, Amy Halloran. Amy's a real flower child. She loves baking. She loves the grains and the flowers. And we love having her on this show. You have a question about grain or flowers or bakeries of yesteryear, give us a call, 800-348-2551. She's always up to something, and we'll find out soon. 800-348-2551. You can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. But the number again is 800-348-2551. An hour of flower power with Amy Halloran coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's a Food Friday, and joining us today is our friend Amy Halloran. Amy's a writer, activist, great baker, lately something of a historian. She's the author of The New Bread Basket, and recently Amy has been delving into the history of bread and baking, especially in the area of Troy, New York. We'll find out what Amy's up to. It's always something exciting when I never know where the conversation will end when Amy's here, but that's part of the fun. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. If you also want to chat with Amy Halloran, 800-348-2551, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. Amy Halloran, welcome back. How are you?
Hi, Ray. I'm so happy to see you.
Do you do mean that?
I do mean that. Good. I woke up this morning at 6 a.m. and I said, I got to make him hot cross buns. I can't believe. I was thinking I was going to make you some Morning Glory muffins because I've been doing those.
What's that?
Morning Glory muffin is like, it's an everything muffin. It has carrots. It's got raisins, shredded apples, everything.
Carrots in a muffin.
It's so good. Carrot cake. Do you cry when somebody gives you carrot cake?
I love carrot cake.
You'd love a carrot. I should have made you those. But instead, I got up and I started to try to make Fryhofer's hot cross buns. Fryhofer's made two different kinds, right? One with just the icing and then this other with a crispy, crunchy, sugary topping.
Yeah.
And I haven't anywhere near nailed it. But it was so funny looking it up online and people having different... People were calling out Fryhofer saying, if you're going to hold the recipe hostage.
Oh, you know, not for nothing. I think these are better. Oh. I had a little nibble before the show. And let me just say at the outset, this Food Friday is going to be a walk in the park compared to the one that happened on Monday at the Terrapin Restaurant with Chef Gail Sokol. We recorded a live show.
Really put you through your paces, huh?
I was so out of my element. Oh, my gosh. I'm cutting it together, so if I call you Gail by mistake, it's my fault. I have been editing this today. Well, it's not going to go to the Radio Hall of Fame. I'll tell you that. But it'll probably be on in a couple of weeks.
Did you have to cut apples and make pie? Oh, my goodness.
Ray. By the way, I'm a little inept, okay? Even cutting apples, it was just, wow. I couldn't believe. And then, you know, I don't do this sort of thing. There's 60 people watching me. It was...
Pressure's on.
A little embarrassed about the whole thing.
Oh.
But it's great to have you here. Hey, what have you been doing?
Oh, my gosh. So I've been hanging out at the Hart Clewitt Museum in Troy.
Yeah.
And... loving being in the archives and looking around at things. Lately, I've been, every day is a new day, but the same flower agenda. And so I look at the city directories, see where the bakeries are in any given year. And then I go over to the maps and I look at the maps and see what, you know, what bakery exists. There's these Sanborn fire insurance maps, which I've been in love with forever.
Yeah, they're cool.
They're so cool because they layer, you know, you can literally see how a neighborhood grows. And also because it's color coded. So, of course, you know, bakeries, using a little bit of fire all the time, they're going to be named loud and clear on the maps.
Ah.
So you can see the footprint of these things, and maybe they have an oven on the alley, and there's a real range of sizes. You know, one of the questions I have is, how did what I know of the history of baking in terms of technology and flour milling and all this stuff fit together in Troy?
Yeah.
Like, I know the national narrative about grain growing moving out west, flour milling popping around to different areas.
Mm-hmm.
But we still had mills in Troy. And so the funnest, you know, I was pretty sure we were not making bread flour in the late 1800s because St. Louis and Minneapolis, they're doing it much better. And they're doing it with grains that are grown in climates that are much, much better for bread. Remember, we've talked before, Ray, about how... We'll go back. We'll have a refresher.
I was going to ask a question, but that I wasn't a blank stare. I was thinking about a question, but go ahead.
So climate really determines what can grow. And in the wheat is an arid crop. That is it's native growing conditions. And to get good kernels that have the characteristics that are going to hang on to a leavened dough and help the fermentation rise, you need a bread wheat.
Right.
So these are harder kernels. They like the more arid summers. What are our summers like? Moist.
Let me just stop you there for a minute. Now, in the olden times, and not even the late 1800s, but going back hundreds, thousands of years, everybody everywhere has had bread.
Everybody ate what was available everywhere.
Right, but they made bread.
Yeah, of course, of course. For the majority of American, you know, of the 19th century, corn and rye were the predominant grains, and you had corn and rye bread.
And you could grow rye and corn here.
Yes.
So prior to... And this is interesting because you've talked a lot about the sort of amalgamation of large companies and concerns making food. So by the 1880s, the grain was already and the breads were coming out of the Midwest?
The grains and the flour were.
Okay, it was still made here.
Yeah, but Western New York State, so 1825, 200 years ago, the anniversary of the Erie Canal. The Erie Canal was the first transportation advance that really began to change what wheat was available.
Mm-hmm.
And the first wheat area really in was Western New York. So, you know, Rochester became the Flour City, F-L-O-U-R.
You're kidding me.
No, because it was fantastic milling. Its life as a milling center didn't last, but there are places, I think, Wheatfield and Wheatville out in Western New York. We still grow wheat in New York State, but it's soft wheat.
What do you mean?
So hard wheat is the bread wheat, and soft wheat is literally softer, and it's better for pastries and cakes and crackers. It doesn't have the...
husk or what do they call that?
No, in the kernels.
Really?
The actual... I don't... Someday... I'll bring in some kernels.
Yeah.
And we can see how a hard wheat is literally harder when you bite it, you know?
Do me a favor.
Mm-hmm.
Do that, but let's not do a live audience show with that, okay? That's a good idea.
We are never going to do that.
I like it.
Never.
Just you and me, kid.
This is it. Just chatter.
Amy Halloran's our guest today on Food Friday. It's grain and flour and baking at 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. So we did have some grains that were grown here in the western part of the state. But the Erie Canal allowed us to, it came over land from the Midwest and then hit the Erie Canal?
Yeah, well, first it went to it opened up Western New York, and then it opened up the Midwest and further and
gotcha.
Further. So Kansas and Minnesota were really great bread grain states. But that's not to say, so yesterday I was looking at a 1904 map, and I was looking at the two flour mills in Troy. And it was so fun to see that Ruff, R-U-F-F, Andrew Ruff's flour mill. So he was a German, and his Germanness was praised in a little history paragraph I was reading about him.
What was so notable about his Germanness?
Well, that he was thorough and orderly, I think is how they said. But he was milling rye, as were Boutwell, Oliver Boutwell Mill, which was down by the Federal Dam in Troy. So Boutwell and Ruff were both milling corn and rye from around here that farmers would grow.
Okay.
So they're serving the area farmers and buckwheat. When I saw the Ruff mill on the map, they had a building dedicated to buckwheat.
Why would you need a separate building?
Well, you don't need one, but it's nice to have one. It's a lot different because buckwheat is not a grain that has any gluten. They weren't thinking about gluten-free back then, of course, but you might want to keep it separate from the rye because buckwheat clings to its hulls, the outer casings, and you need to sift off some of that, or you have a very, very blue-black flour. And it
really?
Might have a little bit of crunch. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a range of buckwheat flours now that are available. Light buckwheat, very light buckwheat. You can get a whole grain buckwheat. And the whole grain often means that it's got quite a lot of the hull, not just the bran of the buckwheat, but the hull, which is an external shell.
We have to take a break, but then we'll pick this up in a moment. Amy Halloran is our guest today. It's grains and flowers and fun with our friend Amy. 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Love this new record, Todd Nelson from Jazz Americana, and that's Dogleg Panhandle. You remember Todd Nelson? You're from around here.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I still get emails from Todd Nelson.
Great new album. Really
it
tremendous.
Sounds great.
Amy Halloran's our guest today. 800-348-2551. The hot cross buns are delicious.
They are very fun. You know, it's basically just a sweet, buttery bun.
Yeah.
That you add some dried fruit too. So I used currants this morning and dried cherries because that's what I had around. And then I need to figure out how to work on Fryhoffers used to have this sugary, crunchy coating.
Yeah, you're really obsessed about
I
this.
I want this.
Why?
I want this.
Yours
Why?
Are better.
Because people want it. It's
okay.
it's such an interesting thing to me how deeply ingrained the food memories are.
Yeah, no, it's
for
true.
People,
yep.
You know, so I have people asking me to make the hermit cookies because I figured out how to make those.
Right? You do that very, very
well. I had somebody from California on Instagram asking me to send him some. I was like, I don't sell them, but
right.
I'll give you the recipe.
Oh, that's
you know?
Nice.
And
so you're still working on this. This is a project for you.
It's a work in progress.
And you're going to make these commercially, or you got a job baking now? What's up with that?
I don't think we can call it a job, but Monday mornings, some Monday mornings. It's not even every Monday morning.
Right.
Over at Nodders in Troy, which is on 5th, just near Broadway.
I don't know this place.
It's a little diner. It's super great.
Yeah.
It's got a very nice atmosphere. And I have just been in love with this place since I went in, and I've been threatening to bake things since then. And I finally am good to my word on some Mondays. So
you just bring your pre-made stuff in, or do you bake it there?
I bake it there. And so I'm going to...
try this?
Yep. On Sunday night, I'll go down and I'll mix up the dough, put it in for a nice slow rise in the refrigerator, which is a really fun thing you can do, and then bake them fresh the next morning.
Now, if I recall the Fryhofer hot cross buns, and I guess they don't make them anymore, right?
Nope.
They just have goop on the top? Isn't that what you don't have on yours?
It's a sugary coating. Can you remember there were two kinds? There's one that just has a shiny top, an egg wash bake,
right,
and it has the cross on top of icing. Or sometimes the cross is a piped sort of sweet flour mixture that's baked on.
Yeah. So why don't you do that?
Why would I do that one? Because the one that people miss, the one that people want is, and there are videos of people trying to make these things, or a video of someone trying to make
these. Is it you on the video?
No,
okay.
It's not me at all. I haven't made that video yet. I'm not sure I'm ready for that kind of prime time either.
No.
But it's, so I just want to be able to ring those taste bells for people. I want to help people have the memory experiences they want.
Well, I want to get back to buckwheat. Mm-hmm. I find the whole topic fascinating, and these flour mills in Troy, Ruff, and the other one. Oh, there's the map.
Yep.
Let me see this.
So that's Andrew Ruff's flour mill. They were getting plaster from Nova Scotia and milling that. And that had its own building, too.
So this had electric. I see on the map here it says electric light. So this is, what year was this?
That's 1904.
Okay.
But it's getting its water power and, had been milling on water power since Troy began.
Yeah.
But that buckwheat mill, I got really excited about that. Then it has a flour mill.
Hang on. Not too many people have made this sentence. That buckwheat mill, I got very excited about. only Amy Halloran has said that sentence.
Okay, you want to know why that means so much to me?
Yeah, why?
Okay, so you read these cookbooks from late 1800s, early 1900s. All kinds of grains are mentioned.
Yeah.
There's rye flour. There's corn. Everybody is using everything. It's not just like flour. Meaning, flour with no adjectives, meaning all-purpose white flour.
Yeah.
All these are used. Buckwheat was a staple food. It wasn't like something you just had on, one summer Sunday and then sat around. It was food. I love seeing a time when there was variety. Nutritionists are really into the whole grain variety and wanting us to eat a lot more grains.
Yeah.
It's not that long ago in our history that was the case.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, so 120 years, that is kind of long ago.
1900, yeah.
And there was still an awful lot of white flour and white bread happening, but it was still there. It was not a surprise to people. And that just makes me feel really good to see physical evidence of that. Same way I get...
How many food historians are there? I mean,
there's a lot.
This is a great line of work for you, given your curiosity. No, I'm not kidding. I mean, this is something that you could dive into and never come back.
Totally, totally. And there are all kinds of things where I need to enlist... because you only know like a tip. Like I see that's a tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
There's another thing I've been looking at are these manuscript cookbooks, which are composition notebooks where people have written out recipes.
Just everyday folks?
Yep. Or the cooks of very fancy people.
Okay.
Not sure which.
All
probably
right.
More like that, because everyday folks were probably working their tails off and they just had their recipes by heart. So I needed to understand about that. So I called a woman who wrote a book about the history of baking powder.
Well, of course you did.
Of course I did. Linda Civitello. And so she helped me understand a lot about those cookbooks. And it's great. Every time I have a question, if I have a question about ovens, I have Paula Marcoux to talk to. She's another cookbook author. She is over in Plymouth, Massachusetts. So, like, you got these people that you can plug into.
Little network.
Yep. Yep.
No, you're something else. Amy Halloran's our guest today. 800-348-2551 is the number. VoxPop@WAMC.org if you want to email. And Catherine in Sharon, Connecticut has a question about hot cross buns. Hello, Catherine.
Hello. What a wonderful program. I called last week and wasn't able to get on. I had a question last week about hot cross buns.
You're kidding.
Well, here's your day.
Wow.
What's your question?
So, and, oh, thank you so much. And what you just said about triggering the memory and so on, you know, we're talking 60, 70 years ago in the Chicago area, German neighborhood, Parabek's Bakery, and the buns themselves were, I think, eggy. They were buttery, but they were eggy. They had a slight yellow to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they used a citron, is that how you say that?
Or citron, I think. Yeah.
Citron. Yep. Citron is a car, right? But what I have not been able to duplicate is the topping. And it was a very distinct cross that went, you know, from one end to the other. And it was like a baked custard.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah.
That's interesting.
So, that's sort of what I remember from getting it from bakeries, not mass-produced, but bakeries around here, too.
Right. So when you say it was like a custard, do you mean that it was really soft, like a custard?
No, not soft, because the wonderful thing, if you put, you know, the icing hot cross buns in the oven, it melts all over. But these, if you warm them slightly, it was, you could almost take them off like a ribbon.
Yeah.
So
okay.
It had substance to it. Yeah. Well, how do I do that?
That is, I think there are a lot of recipes for that. I didn't look at those this morning, so they're not at the tip of my tongue. But it's going to be eggy, buttery, and flour. So you're just making a kind of dough that you pipe, a thin dough that you pipe onto the top of it. I'm trying to think of the right word that you could search, but if you do you follow, I'll eventually or soon be writing about this on my newsletter, Dear Bread.
Dear Bread.
Oh, good.
Yep, and so if you Google my name, Amy Halloran, and Dear Bread, you'll be able to get onto my newsletter list, and I'll be sure to give you a tip right then and there. Okay.
Oh, excellent! Thank you both so much.
Thanks a lot for calling. You know, it's amazing the topic of hot cross buns. People all over the country are interested in this.
Yep.
Up until, you know, 30 minutes ago, I had no idea. But Amy Halloran, this is the thing that you do. Let's go back quickly. We'll go back to the phones in a minute. 800-348-2551. I'm fascinated by the two flour mills in Troy.
Mm-hmm.
And so one was Ruff, right?
Yep.
R-U-F-F.
Uh-huh.
And the other one was what?
Boutwell. B-O-U-T-W-E-L-L. And they were both... That was bigger, too. And
Boutwell was bigger?
Boutwell was bigger.
Were they competitors? Was it a fierce competition? Or I guess you wouldn't know unless you're reading the writings.
Yeah.
But I'm interested in the sort of commercial dynamic of having two big flour mills. How close were they together?
Well, so River Street, even north of the Ale House, and... You know where the posting kill is, Ray?
Sure.
Yeah, so not close. They were not nearby. When Boutwell was getting grain, they also had a big storage warehouse over on Green Island as well. So, and Boutwell had a few names for its rye flours. And this, I wanted to talk to you about this because I know your one of your relatives was a German, a baker in New York City,
My great-grandparents on my father's side, yeah.
Yeah, so the flours, these rye flours that I was talking about, would have been shipped into the city. It's not just locally. I mean, some of it's going local, but mills are big.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing a lot of work.
How many people did they employ? Do you have any idea?
Know. No, there's no company records of it. So it's really just sort of looking at the footprint, reading whatever tallies they have in some kind of industrial records about how much they're producing a day to guess at it. But I do know that they had a brand called Upper Hudson. And so, the German and Northern European immigrants really loved rye flours and were baking with them, especially, so 1900, there's, we don't have factory bread quite yet. Like, Fraunhofer's was 1913, Ward Bakery was just, which eventually became the Wonder Bread.
Really? People, from around here?
Not from around here. Like, I'm talking.
Gotcha.
I'm accordioning in and out of local and national. What I'm trying to say is that rye breads, and we're not necessarily talking about deli rye, but rye breads were the breads of immigrants.
Mm.
And people wanted them, and they made them. So this rye flour, which is interestingly enough super hard to find in the supermarket today, right?
But it was ubiquitous around here back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Are there still any rye fields around here?
No. Nope.
So what happened?
It was just a lot.
Economically not viable, or is something changed in the...
No. It just, I was surprised to see that even to 1900, there's some grains that are getting locally grown and ground.
Mm.
Because it's so much more efficient to grow it elsewhere and have cheap shipping and bring it in.
Right.
That it's, yeah. So it was basically what happened was the 20th century.
Okay. Yeah. Amy Halloran is our guest. You know, you're like the Encyclopedia Breadtanica. 800-348-2551. And let's go to Ellen, who is in Troy. Hello, Ellen.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Great. Okay, I know both of you. I took your class at the library. I live in Troy, Amy, before COVID.
Oh.
And I know Ray from the radio.
The station, yeah.
So this is my Troy. The boundaries of Troy have changed in so many ways. And I do believe that Water Valete was West Troy.
You are right.
At one point.
You are right.
Yes. I also thought that Bread City was Syracuse. I may be wrong there. I didn't know that it was Rochester.
Well,
but my question is, yeah, go ahead.
Well, Flower City, not Bread.
I have a different question.
Yeah.
Flower City, correct.
Okay.
Okay, so my question is, do you know anything? I've always been obsessed since I was a child with the Shakers, reading about them, and they started in our area. So the question is, do you know anything? Did they make bread? I mean, they had those very dominated kitchens, meeting halls. That's the nature of my question.
They made nice chairs, right?
Good chairs. You've caught me unawares, but I'm sure that they made bread because they made everything. Everybody made bread.
Right.
There is a very active Shaker historic site over by the airport.
Oh yeah,
They have good cookbooks there too that you could look at. But I will take a look at this and next time have something to say.
All right.
Thanks,
Ellen,
for the question.
Thanks a lot. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Amy Halloran today. Flour and grain, and I tell you, I love going down memory lane, and you and Kathy Sheehan over at the Hart Clewitt must just be thick as thieves.
It's heaven.
Yeah.
It's absolute heaven.
She'll be back on soon, too. So sometime you both come on. It'll be a great time. All right, let's grab one more call. We'll take a break, and then we'll go check the email bag and more phone calls. 800-348-2551. Let's go to Who's a Tonic? Chris, you're on.
Amy, I got a couple of questions for you.
Okay.
Could you make first papaya buns? And secondly, could you also make coconut buns? And lastly, a kiwi buns.
Kiwi, papaya, and coconut.
Well, I do sometimes put coconut in my Morning Glory muffins. I don't generally use papaya or kiwi. I'm sure you could bake with them if you understood their acidity. But, I mean, dried papaya makes a really, like I have in a hot cross bun, as a matter of fact, used dried papaya cut up into tiny pieces in place of citron because I didn't really like citron. So I'm sure you could, but you'd have to like papaya first. And unfortunately, I don't.
Chris, I got a question and you don't have
to
answer.
How about green tea?
Green tea. You bake with green tea?
Sure. People use tea as a basis for baking.
All right. Now, listen, Chris, I'm going to ask you a question. You don't have to answer the question. You're clearly very interested in papaya. Just wondering why. What's going on there?
Well, because, Ray, I've read a lot on papaya because it's very, first of all, it's very good for you.
Yeah.
And secondly, it's a very good fruit to eat and stuff like that.
That's cool. Well, yeah, I mean, well, I appreciate the call. We're overdue for a break. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Amy Halloran, and we have another segment ahead. Hang in there. Maynard Ferguson here. Maynard Ferguson and the band Blue Birdland here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. If you want to talk to Amy Halloran, where I love it when Amy Halloran is on. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Dee in Altamont writes, is it true that gluten sensitivity is caused by use of Roundup on wheat fields? I've heard some companies, such as King Arthur, only use wheat grown on Roundup-free fields. Is this true? And that's from Dee in Altamont.
Well, I cannot attest to King Arthur's practices or anybody's practices.
Yeah.
I can say that I've read that glyphosate or Roundup is being held as potentially culpable in a whole rash of dietary problems from IBS to wheat intolerance. Some people.
But the jury's out.
The jury's out. There's no proof.
Okay. Let's go back to our phones, and it's Rick in Albany. Rick, you're on.
Hey, Ray and Amy. Love the show.
Thanks.
In the beginning of the segment, you guys talked about a map. What was the name of that map?
Yeah. That's the Sanborn, S-A-N-B-O-R-N, Fire Insurance Map.
Uh-huh.
And they are digitized. So you can look up the history of your neighborhoods online.
How far back do they go?
Well, it depends on when the cities developed. The earliest of Troy's is somewhere in the mid to late 1800s.
Mm.
I can't remember the earliest date on that. Did you have another? Sounds like you had another part of a question.
Right? I had one more quick question. Like what you were talking about before, how brings back memories. Did those hot cross buns come in like a 6 or a 12 pack, like a foil?
Six. Pack? Yep. They were 6 packs. They were small, right? Like I think probably their boxes were all the same. They sort of looked like the size of their chocolate chip cookie boxes, right?
Well, a little bigger, but maybe not.
Maybe a little bigger.
Yeah.
What's that?
Yeah, I remember pulling them apart. Pulling them apart.
Delightful.
And like in the spring.
Yeah. Good
Great
stuff.
Show. Thank you.
Thanks, man.
Thanks.
Appreciate the call. Mary writes in, Ellenville Bakery Raisin Rye. This was an historic Catskill bakery. Old school was there for generations. I used to buy the best dark rye with raisins there. Already 25 years ago at least, says Mary. They had international orders, very well known. Wonder if you knew of this bread or where I might find a recipe for a good dark rye that does not rely on coffee for flavor. Maybe I could replicate this recipe. And that's from Mary.
I don't have that. I did read one. That was a wheat yesterday in another cookbook. But I know where to look for one. And you might want to check out Stanley Ginsberg's books. He wrote The Rye Baker and another book about rye. And you could also find him online and ask him for a recipe. He could really help. Stanley Ginsberg.
Okay. Amy Halloran is our guest. Now, back to buckwheat for just a moment, and then we'll go back to the
Yeah.
Farms. So you said if you leave the hulls, is that the correct term, hulls?
Yep.
On them and grind the flour, it's going to be blue? Did you say that?
Blue or black, yeah, because the buckwheat, the common buckwheat that's grown here is has black dark hulls.
Yeah.
And so the flower is a beautiful blue.
And would you, if it was your, it is yours every time you bake, would you prefer that?
I like the hull.
You do?
I really like the hull. I get, yeah. And I'm not supposed to mention names.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Farmer ground flowers. And I can get it at the co-op. The co-op, all your co-ops have a really wide range of flours. So when you want to say, oh, I want to play with a lot of different grains, go to a co-op. They have bulk bins, so you can just get a cup and see whether you like the texture of it, see how to play with it.
And buckwheat, I mean, great pancakes, right?
Yeah.
You remember those days when you used to make pancakes?
We got to do that again.
You've lost that mania.
I did. That's because my second son, the king, the little prince, likes bread, not pancakes.
Oh.
So there the bread mania
you
began.
You better educate that boy. Pancakes are pretty good.
They're good, but he just likes bread.
All right, fair enough. Let's go to I think it's Greenwich. Might be Greenwich, Connecticut. Nope, that's the wrong one. Paul, what state are you in?
Hello?
Hello, are you in Greenwich, New York or Greenwich, Connecticut?
Yeah, Greenwich, New York.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hi. Some years ago retired from the New York State Library, but I worked there in special collections for 37 years. So I just wanted to say regarding the growing of grain in Rensselaer County, among the records in the library where I worked were all the papers of the Van Rensselaer Manor, which the Van Rensselaer family owned most of all of Rensselaer County and a good portion of Albany County from the 15th century on, and or 16th century rather, and they rented out lands there. And in those leases, which I've seen many of, they often specify the rent to be paid in the form of so many bushels of wheat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so many fat geese.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And is there a cheese maker named Four Fat Fowl?
Oh, my gosh. They're great.
Yes,
they're in Steventown. Yeah.
That's because they're playing on that wording. Yeah. Yeah.
They said four fat geese. That was typical of the leases. But the bushels of wheat were pretty common.
It's amazing
so
to think
about. So
they're
obviously growing wheat in Rensselaer County and Albany County.
Oh, yeah, of course. People grew it. I mean, I grew it in my backyard.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah.
Do you still do that?
Oh, no. It's too much work.
Ah, really?
Yeah.
All right, Paul, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. I recall doing a beer show years ago, and I believe there is a spot in Albany, somewhere downtown, where hops can still be found, the original just a neighborhood, not a great number of them, but just sort of along a fence or something.
I'm going to have to go hunting this, Ray, because...
By the way, I may have imagined that whole thing, but
seem
to recall
we'll work
that
with
being
your imagination.
I seem to recall there are some spots downtown where there's still some of these original hops from way back when.
I'm going to do a hop tour. on my bicycle.
Do you have time to do anything? I mean, you're pretty busy. I
need to find some hops for a certain recipe.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. You're going to make beer?
No. Yeast.
You're going to make yeast.
Yep.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Mitchell in Westover, Vermont. Mitchell, you're on. Mitchell. Hello. Okay, Mitchell. Oh, Mitchell. All right. Goodbye, Mitchell.
I have something to say.
What?
I am teaching a class next Saturday.
Really?
Yep. Not tomorrow, but a week from tomorrow at the Hart Clouet Museum. It's a free class. All you need to do is register. It's from 1 to 3 p.m. And we are going to be looking at diaries and cookbooks and all sorts of things. These kind of track records people left behind, and using them as prompts to write our own journals or think about the records that people have kept over time.
Do you keep any records like that when you're?
I'm pretty erratic.
Really?
My husband always says I need to have somebody writing down what I do, and so the closest way I keep recipe records.
Yeah.
Bill Brown, who used to run the Miss Albany Diner with his family.
Ah, the good old Miss Albany Diner.
Miss Albany Diner.
Yeah,
now,
buddy.
Talk about recipes worth saving and replaying.
Yes.
Bill gave me a recipe notebook so that I could try, but I can't make myself do it. So I text my friend in Maine. I text her.
Then what, she writes it down?
Yeah, she has some savvy way of going through the records of our text. Our long text history.
Oh.
Yep.
You know, why don't you make your husband write everything down? If it was his grand idea, why don't you make him do it?
It's not, you know. You imagine a different kind of partnership.
You don't want to get into trouble, and you just want me to leave that alone. All right. The number here is 800-348-2551. Amy Halloran is our guest today. It's grain and baking and flour, and I always learn something about the old days. Let's go to Betsy in Schenectady. Betsy, go ahead.
Oh, hi. I just heard you talk about how you want some hops.
Uh-huh.
I grow Cascade hops, if that's the variety you want. And
wow.
My sister-in-law grows Noble hops down in Garrison.
You're kidding me.
So I gave my phone number, and
all right.
If you want them or...
Do me a favor, Betsy. I don't know if, Amy, you want to give your email, but if not, you can email voxpop@wamc.org, and I will forward it over to Amy.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
What do you do with them, Betsy?
Bye-bye.
Betsy, what do you do with the hops?
I started to grow. I like to garden, and I had area that I didn't know what to do with, and my nephew wanted to brew beer.
Ah.
And he needed the Noble variety of hops.
Yeah.
And which was harder to grow. Cascade is very easy to grow. It became quite invasive. I had to, you know, I keep giving it away, actually. And there are places down in Albany. There's places in Schenectady by Mad Jack Brewing. A lot of people grow hops because it's a very pretty leaf, and the vine is pretty, and it doesn't attract bees.
Ah, very well, Betsy. Thanks for the call. Now, how do you make yeast out of hops?
You boil it.
What?
You make like a tea.
Yeah.
And then you put in some starch. Of, I mean, there's different recipes, but there's one I'm going to follow.
Really? And I hate to ask this late in the show, but why?
Well, I can't believe I haven't done it already. Right?
But what recipe requires you to make your own yeast?
Well, you know, I'm stuck in trying to reimagine the 19th century. I wonder why, but yeah. I couldn't tell you. But there's just...
19th century or...
Mostly it's the late 19th century.
Okay.
But wanting to, like, 1850 onward.
All right.
I want to figure out how we got where we are, not just with food, but in the whole American story. You know, we tell all these stories about democracy and who we are. And I get into that through looking at food and seeing what food truths were available. You know, who was making bread at home when there was a great mythology that only good mothers made their bread at home.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was a huge, huge part of an identity and of course they're talking about white middle class women,
right?
Because you might not have time or even an oven to bake at home otherwise.
Yeah.
But there was a huge mythology over that. And so it's a way of looking at the myths that became the blueprints for who we are. I mean, you and I grew up with all that 1976 bicentennial fervor, right?
Right.
Like that was heavy. That was frosting on our everyday, all the red, white, and blue and the fireworks at the plaza. It was, you know, dressing
the
up.
The Freedom Train. Remember the Freedom Train? Do you remember that?
No,
you don't remember the Freedom Train?
No.
It was came in right in Albany, on the Albany side of the tracks, and everyone went down, and it was, you know, each car had history of the country going back to 1776.
Oh, I bet my parents took me to that.
Oh, you must. I know you're much younger than I, but I remember it very
not
well.
Not that much anymore.
No?
No, we're probably there's not that many years between us, but we'll talk about that
so
other.
So you wrote The New Breadbasket, and it's cool. But what you talk about now seems so expansive. Do you see another book in your future?
I do, but I'm having a really hard time finding the container to fit it.
Like, yeah. No, I get
it. Because it's everything that I'm interested in is expansive, and everything touches everything else. So how, you know, I tried writing a book proposal maybe a year and a half ago now. And my friend said, when he read the proposal, I think you've got about three books here.
This is it. This is what I'm saying. So you're still pretty young. Why don't you start?
Well, I mean, I know. Well, I am starting. I'm trying again. I'm rewriting the proposal, trying to narrow it down. We'll see.
When they made these books and people put their recipes in these little notebooks, that's all by hand. When you write, are you writing on a computer?
I am writing on a computer, and sometimes I dictate.
What?
Because I got a tragic typing injury when I wrote that New Breadbasket.
Yeah.
Gave it all my arms. And so I like to vary the way of thinking, because sometimes you stare at the computer and the blank page is strangling you. So if you just speak it into your phone or speak it into, you know, some voice to text thing, you get out of your own way.
That's wisdom. All right, so we're done here, Amy Halloran.
Oh.
I just want to show you this email that Nora sent in. Grandma's composition book, and just look, you can see this while I close the show.
Oh my Lord.
You enjoy that. And support comes from G&H Lumber at Home at Marvin Windows, partnering with homeowners and builders on renovations and new home construction. Lumber tools expertise, G&H Lumber at Home in Greenville, Latham, or Windham. Farmers India Market, offering fresh produce, spices, and international foods from India, Afghanistan, the Caribbean, and Middle East. A wide variety of ready-to-eat fare and desserts. Central Ave at Coles Plaza, Colony. Barrington Brewery, Great Barrington, solar brewed beer served fresh 6 days a week since 1995, serving 9 beers on tap and 1 cask conditioned ale. Full kitchen menu available for lunch and dinner. Closed Tuesdays, barringtonbrewery.net. And the Devlin Inn and Suites, Main Street, Lake Placid, welcoming families, athletes, and groups to the historic Olympic Village with Adirondack mountain views and dog friendly accommodations. The Devlin NY. .com to learn more. Once again, thanks to the great Amy Halloran for being with us today. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Phone screened again by Andrea Leong. You've been putting the hours in, and thank you for that. I'm Ray Graff. Have yourself a splendid weekend. We'll see you Monday at 2:00.